Hello, and welcome to More Access to Now. And I'm Sherry Taves, and it is nice to see names that I recognize, and welcome to the people who are here for the first time for More Access to Now. Welcome. Hello to everyone who's listening to the recording. Yay! Let's get started for today. So today is Module 3 of a 5-part series on emotional awareness. And today I'm going to be talking about why fear is your friend and how you too can create happiness. And before we get to that, I want to invite people to arrive to the call. My Access to Now grads, this will be a good time for you to start tapping, bring up your container, and clear your mental desktop. And everyone else, take a moment and connect with something for which you are truly grateful for. It could be something in your business or your personal life. Deep breath into your heart space. And just breathe out everything that is not needed. Breathe in that grateful feeling. Exhale everything out that is not needed. You can just feel yourself settling a little more into where you're sitting, a little more grounded. Good. So today for our exercise, you're going to want to have something to write on, to take some notes if you haven't printed out the notes for the call. And I'd like to remind you that anytime you have a question, you can raise your hand by pressing any number between 1 through 5 on your phone's keypad. Right. So this is a 5-part series on emotional awareness. And we're on Module 3 about fear. And if you didn't join me for Module 1 or 2, we covered how to move through anger and sadness and how those feelings are essential to your happiness. And if you'd like the link to those recordings, you can email me at sherry@effortlessmomentum.com. And today we're going to be covering the third basic emotion, fear, and how managing and dealing with that will lead to your happiness as well. So if you have been joining me on these calls, I've introduced the concept of emotional resilience and how that relates to your feelings. So let me recap. Emotional resilience is the armor you need for modern life. Resilience is how you move through daily stress and life challenges and manage your emotions. And we humans were highly capable and creative problem solvers who can become stronger and more flexible in stressful times. Therapists call this emotional resilience. And it's a key ingredient as to why some people sail through stress without a care in the world. In order to build emotional resilience, we must begin by being aware of ourselves and how we typically react in difficult situations or stressful situations or change. And there are 9 components of emotional resilience, and you can see them listed on the umbrella slide. There's spirituality at the tip, and emotional awareness is at the handle. So today I'm going to talk about one of the components that is at the center of them all, and that's emotional awareness. It is the first foundational piece. And emotional awareness, simply put, is that you understand what you're feeling and why. Because then you can make empowered choices on how to deal with your feelings. Feel my feelings, you ask? But here's the good news. If you need to enhance this component of emotional resilience, today I'm going to just let you know a simple and easy way to do that. And feeling your feelings doesn't mean you have to turn into a raving lunatic or a puddle on the floor. But allowing yourself to feel emotions appropriate to a situation, whether or not they're pleasant in the moment, is key to long-lasting happiness. So research tells us that 50% of our resilience is in our genes. Essentially, we're born with a certain amount. Then 10% of our resilience is due to the circumstances we're in. And 40% of our resilience can be attributed to our daily activities and habits. So what's key here is that you have control over about 50% of the spring in your step, and you can develop your resilience. So feelings are our life force, and they're what pulls us in to connect in a much deeper way to ourselves and with others. Feelings give us direction about our wants, needs and desires. And there's five basic emotions: mad, sad, glad, scared, and bad. Think of these feelings like they're the warning lights on your car's dashboard. They're meant to be an early warning system to let you know something needs attention. And when you pay attention to them first, when you first notice the light, it's usually a simple fix. Ignore the light and the problem gets bigger. And the same is true with our emotions. However, you can't handle your emotions if you don't feel them first. So I invite you to give yourself permission to notice your feelings throughout your day. Challenge yourself to identify what you're feeling and use the chart. And I sent a separate feelings chart that you can print out so that you can have that handy and just remind yourself. Just challenge yourself to pick some feelings on the feeling chart as you give yourself permission to feel your feelings. But today we're going to explore fear. President Franklin Roosevelt famously asserted, "The only thing we have to fear is fear itself." And I think he was right. Fear and the way we handle it probably causes more problems in our lives than any of the things we're really afraid of. So today I'm going to start by defining fear, talking about the feelings associated with it, and talking about some of the reasons that causes fear to arise. You're going to discover how to appropriately work with fear so that you can release it fully, which is what is needed in order to be fully present in the here and now of your life. So fear has gotten a bad rap amongst most human beings, and it's not nearly as complicated as we try to make it. A simple and useful definition of fear is an anxious feeling caused by our anticipation of some imagined event or real experience. And this is important to stop and take in. Fear is our response to an imagined event or experience. Even when you feel afraid in the moment, it is because of something you think is going to happen next. You're feeling anticipatory anxiety. And when that thing or event is actually happening, you're no longer experiencing the fear. You're dealing with the situation itself. And we'll go into this a little more deeply in a minute. So fear, like all other emotions, is basically information. It offers you knowledge and understanding if you choose to accept it. And on a physiological level, it provides appropriate resources for dealing with certain kinds of basic survival. The key is in understanding and distinguishing the origin of the fear and being able to use it or release it effectively. Shallow breathing, sinking feeling in your stomach, clammy hands, goosebumps, weak knees are some of the sensations associated with fear. And these defense responses have nothing to do with reason. The part of the brain that detects danger, our friend the amygdala, is simply a switch that flips on so the body can react ASAP to a potential threat. And because of its location in the brain, it receives sensory information before the prefrontal cortex does. And the prefrontal cortex is the thinking or rational part of the brain. That means that the body will go into fight, flight, or freeze mode before your mind can even make sense of what's going on. This was extremely helpful to our ancestors who had wild animals and other physical dangers to contend with. And it's still extremely helpful when we have a real emergency situation to deal with today, such as seeing an oncoming car swerving into your lane. Our innate defense responses make us physically capable of steering clear of that danger. It's our body providing us superhero qualities right when we need them. And it is the amygdala who is, in effect, lighting that bat signal to call the powers in to save the day. Unfortunately, however, the amygdala is pretty limited in its ability to help us out in the modern dangers. It would be so awesome if we could summon superhuman reasoning ability or psychic abilities which would allow us to foretell the outcome of the situation, but alas, that's not how the system works. There are really good reasons to learn how to rein in the alarmist amygdala, because it can take up to 4 hours for the body to recover completely from fright and settle into the normal healthy state. If not processed properly and released, fear can morph into chronic stress and anxiety, And these prolonged defense responses, like elevated blood pressure, suppressed immune system, wreaks havoc on our hormone levels. And if that weren't bad enough, fear stops creativity and rational thought. Makes your world get smaller and smaller. So let's take a look at the biology of fear so that you can identify it in your body. And I have a lot to say on the biology of fear because I really want you to get how profoundly impactful fear and stress is on your body. And this is all an automatic response. So your heart pumps blood to your arms and legs more quickly and forcefully, priming them to fight or flee and causing a rise in blood pressure. Blood flow may increase as much as 400% to your extremities. The extra tension in your poised for action legs can literally cause you to shake in your boots. Your breathing speeds up and gets shallow to get oxygen into the lungs, where it's picked up by blood and delivered to the muscles. Your adrenal glands release chemicals such as cortisol and adrenaline into your bloodstream, triggering a variety of defense mechanisms. The hair on your arms and legs stand up, a reflex that probably made our hairier ancestors look bigger and scarier. Now this trick just results in goosebumps. Perspiration picks up when you're scared, in case you need to fight or run, causing clammy hands and a sweaty brow. And the reason you start to sweat is that as it evaporates, it cools down your body. Your eyes seem to pop out of your head. Your eyelids widen, your pupils dilate so that you can see as much of your surroundings as possible. And the rush of blood to arms and legs, leaving other parts of the body cold, creates that sensation of chills up your spine. Messages from the part of the brain that prevents the bladder from letting loose may be overridden by this system, which controls the fear response, resulting in the feeling of an urgent need to pee or even an accident. And when the body's in crisis mode, digestion shuts down since it's not necessary while fighting or fleeing. And this can cause butterflies in your belly, nausea, and diarrhea. The immune system goes on break in order to reorganize itself to fight infection, say from a wolf bite, and this turns its attention away from the normal job of keeping you well. This is one of the reasons why you're more likely to get sick when you're chronically stressed. And this is interesting too. The parts of the brain responsible for short-term memory, concentration, and rational thought go on hiatus while your focus is on saving your own hide. Fear literally causes you to lose IQ points. And you'll notice as I've been talking about the biology of fear, the slide, how that elephant is definitely having a fear response to his perceived threat of that little mouse. So adorable. So it's pretty easy to see the design brilliance of fear in the body for our more primitive ancestors. However, all these amazing factory-installed features don't help us at all in the moment when we realize we just sent an angry email about our boss to our boss, right? All right, now that you recognize fear in your body, and it doesn't have to be fight, flight, or frozen, because the lesser responses to stress and fear are baby versions of that, like procrastination, feeling stuck, stress. So let's take a look at the four primary causes of fear so that you can figure out what to do with all that adrenaline. Like I mentioned before, fear is caused by our anticipation of some imagined event or experience. The experiences or events we imagine tend to lie in four basic areas. First, the fear of death or injury. Second is the fear of abandonment or rejection by others. Third is the fear of being trapped or controlled. And finally, what psychologists call fear of ego death, which is in the realm of humiliation or some form of complete rupture of your sense of self-worth. So let me tell you a little bit here. Your ego is your perspective or your mind's arrangement of reality. of your self-worth, all of your experiences, personality traits, views and opinions that have been constructed about yourself since you were a child. So it's your sense of self or self-identity. And humans look for security and safety both around their physical body and their ego, no matter how secure and safe they might actually be. Additionally, most of us look for the security and safety in the external world. For example, we look to money and wealth or another person or our position within our world to give us that security and identity we seek. Think of an ego death as a super profound embarrassment that feels like your self-worth is at stake. Here's a really interesting example of an ego death. When I was an intern, just starting out, one of my colleagues wore a certain pair of shoes when she was in session with a client. Yes, she would actually change her shoes when she would go into session, before she'd go into session. And one day, all of us interns were at lunch, and we ran into one of her clients. And he saw her with her regular shoes on. And she got really flustered. And when we got back to the office, I was fascinated. She had a total meltdown, tears and sobbing. What did her patient think of her? And this was her worry and meltdown was all because somehow her value and effectiveness as a therapist was in how she looked or was perceived with those shoes on. So this was an ego death for her. And most ego deaths are valuable. They allow you to make room for a bigger, more positive version of yourself. She, with help from others, she eventually got that her value was in the relationship she created with her clients, not in how professional she looked in a certain pair of shoes. So pretty much all of the usual fears can be traced back to one of these four basic fears. For instance, fear of heights is a fear of death or fear of injury. Fear of public speaking could be a fear of it having an ego death. Fear of intimacy or fear of commitment is basically a fear of you losing your autonomy or feeling trapped or controlled. FOMO, fear of missing out or looking stupid, comes under being worried about rejection or abandonment. In addition, some emotions are just aliases for these primary fears. And if you track them down to their most basic level, the basic fear shows through. For example, jealousy is the expression of the fear of rejection or abandonment. And fear is often a base emotion on which anger floats. Oppressed people rage against their oppressors because they fear or actually experience that loss of autonomy, or they sustain injury or even an ego death. And fear can even use sadness as an ally to keep you paralyzed from making changes in your life. So if we reconsider the amygdala, the alarm that goes off before we even process the danger signals with our thinking brain, we notice that the fear response it triggers can be expressed in one of three basic forms: fight, flight, or freeze. In cases where one of these is an appropriate response, great. But these days, the dangers we imagine are subtler, and most of them require a calm, reasonable reaction. In addition, the amygdala can't identify what I call the various flavors of fear, the different degrees of fear which correspond to situations we are imagining. In fact, as if that weren't bad enough, the amygdala can't even tell the difference between real and imagined fears, or the difference between excitement and fear. And while individual people's amygdala comes sort of pre-wired to be more or less sensitive, we all as humans can get hit with a fear response, actually making our lives much harder to manage. All right, any questions? So again, feel free if you have any questions or have an aha or want to make a statement, you can press 1 through 5 on your touch-tone phone. So like all the emotions, there are healthy and unhealthy ways of dealing with fear. And let's look briefly at the less than ideal ones first. Some basic misuses of fear are fighting, taking it out on someone else other than dealing with the real issue, flight or avoidance through drugs, alcohol, other addictions like work, avoiding by focusing on other aspects of your life, and freeze, is procrastination falls into this category. All right, and Phyllis has a question.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good, thank you.
This is marvelous. It's all
thank you.
So fantastic. So perhaps I'm a little premature, but what I love, and I'm sure perhaps I'm a little jumping the gun, with the identification of these, of which I experience a lot of fear paralysis sometimes, although I appear to be a very confident person through work and various aspects of my life. What are you going to cover, Sherry, the exit plan and the strategies to hold on to on a card in my wallet on my board to be able to feel the fear and go with it anyway and somehow dissipate it so that I have suffered illnesses from fear that I have submerged and covered up very effectively. Right. Nobody would ever dream that I have any diffidence or self-doubt. Thank you.
And you are very welcome. And yes, we're going to be doing an exercise that you can do over and over again that will give you the tools that you're asking for. Absolutely.
Right. Great.
Thanks for asking.
Great. Thank you.
You're welcome. Right. And Elise? Hi.
Hi. I didn't have a question, but I had a comment. I really appreciated the physiological changes or reactions that you shared. Because, like, when you said the digestion will temporarily, like, stop or shut down, it's like that's where I feel my fear is, like immediately an upset stomach. And I thought that was really interesting. That was all I wanted to share.
Ah, thank you. Thank you. I appreciate that. And I look forward to seeing what you do with that new noticing, especially as it relates to the exercise. Awesome. Okay, so a couple of other tendencies I see how people deal with fear in an unhealthy way. Repression, avoidance, and this is pretty much that stiff upper lip, never let them see you sweat. I think Phyllis kind of alluded to this. It's you muscling that awareness of fear into the background and not allowing it outlet or expression. Some people do the opposite. They wallow in it, basically just rolling over and surrendering to fear, worry, and ruminating. Another one I see is misdirection, and this is a tricky one. And it's when we worry about things that are extremely unlikely rather than attending to things that are actual dangers, like being afraid to fly, for example, but not thinking twice about texting while driving, or worrying about a terrorist attack, but you're not maintaining healthy blood pressure and weight. So avoiding handling your emotional fears costs you self-confidence, self-esteem, quality of life, your health, causes distance and erodes your most intimate relationships. Not being aware of fear can cause you to do things and make decisions that aren't in your best interest. For instance, fear of missing out may cause you to go to that party when you really need to stay in and relax. Fear of looking silly or stupid stops you from taking risks and you miss out on growing your business or having fun with friends. Fear of making someone angry or disappointing them silences your voice, suppressing your wants and needs. Avoiding handling real danger, ignoring physical symptoms, can turn a head cold into a sinus infection. Of course, certain types of fear are more serious and beyond the scope of this talk. Clinical conditions such as OCD, PTSD, and phobias will require outside help from a trained professional. But for the most part, I want you to understand that fear is usually your friend. All right, there are real benefits to feeling fear and handling it. You're going to experience more control to move through fear, anxiety, worry. You're going to train your brain to self-soothe and look for the positives in life. Fear properly engaged and handled alerts us to real threats and motivates action. It signals danger both physical and emotional. Another benefit to fear is it signals that you're learning, that you've moved beyond your comfort zone, that you're stretching and growing, and that's a good thing. Fear lets you know what's important to you, because if you fear losing it, it's worth attending to and taking care of. And fear holds creative tension. It can happen, fear can happen when you are on that verge of a real breakthrough. So here we go. How do you tame your fear? The exercise we're about to do is designed for you to get perspective about your fear. You're going to learn how you are in control of your fear, how to turn down those responses, so that your frontal cortex, your rational brain, can join the party, allowing you to get connected to your courage and the stuff that you do know, your positives. All right, let's get comfy. First, I want to teach you this breathing technique called the measured breath. In Access to Now grads, you can always do CMD before the exercise. And I do want you, also my grads, to learn the measured breath technique, because this technique helps to reset your body's physiological or chemical responses to fear. Okay, so drop your shoulders, relax your jaw, close your eyes or not, have them in a soft focus. Now gently breathe in. It doesn't have to be a deep breath. Through your nose, gently breathe in through your nose to a count of four. One, two, three, four. Hold it for a second. Breathe out to seven. One, two, three, four, five, six, seven. Again, gently in through your nose to a count of four, however fast it's comfortable for you. Hold it for a second. Breathe out for seven. Keep your shoulders down. And allow your stomach to expand as you breathe in. The count of four and seven is not important. Seven feels too long. You can pick any number here that's comfortable for you, just as long as the out-breath is longer. This allows your body to counteract the physiological effects of shallow breathing. One more time, in through your nose for four. One, two, three, four, hold it. One, two, three, four, five, six, seven. Good. You just keep practicing that breathing. And here's a fun fact. The reason this works is because when we breathe shallow or fast, you actually then create too much oxygen in your bloodstream. And when we aren't using that to run or fight, it causes lightheadedness or dizziness. And to use the oxygen in your body, you need a certain amount of carbon dioxide in your system. And the longer breath allows your body to retain carbon dioxide. You get the same effect from breathing in and out of a paper bag, just creating more carbon dioxide so that you can use that oxygen, that extra oxygen that's in your body. Any questions about the measured breathing? All right. Here's where you're going to take some notes. But I want you to think of something that is currently causing you some anxiety. Could be an event or a task coming up. You might want to pick a chronic worry that might haunt you. Just jot that down in the place, your notes of what fear you're going to be working with today. And now look at that feeling slide. What feelings go along with what you just jotted down? Uneasy, anxious, dread. And when you've got that written down, what fear you're working with, feelings that you've identified, I want you to set your pen down give yourself permission to notice where you're feeling that fear and anxiety in your body. Your stomach. You may have noticed that your breathing got shallow. That uh-oh feeling or dread in your tummy. Now close your eyes. Let's do some measured breathing. And gently through your nose. 1, 2, 3, 4. Through your mouth. 2, 3, 4, 5, 7. Gently in through your nose. 1, 2, 3, 4. Hold. Out through your mouth. 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. One more time. Gently in through your nose. 2, 3, 4. Gently out through your mouth. 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Good. Go ahead and open your eyes. What have you noticed about your anxiety? Notice how much you've quieted down that fear response. Turned it down. You may notice that you're feeling more settled, more grounded. When you do this on your own, you may want to stay longer with the measured breath. Now I want you to go back to your notes and consider the next question. How does that fear I'm working with make perfect sense? Does that fear make perfect sense? And you're going to notice you probably have a compassionate perspective now, a normalizing perspective. Oh, that fear makes perfect sense because... Take a moment to jot down what you notice. For instance, that fear of giving that talk makes perfect sense because I'm new at this, and, you know, I'm really prepared. Or you might be worrying about a difficult conversation, and that makes perfect sense, because conflict's hard for me, and I really want to practice standing up for myself. You might be anticipating feeling anxious about expressing a want or a need or a boundary, and that makes perfect sense. Because I'm learning to be vulnerable. And vulnerability comes with being nervous about being a beginner. And that's okay. If the "and" part isn't coming up for you, you might want to remind yourself, why are you risking whatever you're risking? Why are you taking that action step? What's the value in it? And if your worry or fear isn't around an action step, your "and" might just be reminding yourself that you're going to be okay, reconnecting with your sense of hope for the future. And I want to remind you that when you come to the end of this too, access to Now Grads, now would be an appropriate time, if you needed to put more of that fear in your container to be reviewed later. So I would love to hear some shares about what compassionate perspective that you got, or if you have any questions about this part of the exercise before we move on. Debbie has a share.
Did you say Debbie?
I did. Hello.
Oh, you broke up a little bit. I wanted to make sure. Okay, so the fear that that came to my mind quite quickly is the fear I have of talking with the principal at our high school. This year I taught a small group of kids, 4 of them, Algebra 2 at my home, so it was kind of a homeschool class. And it was the only class that they had homeschooled because the teachers kind of aren't very good at Algebra 2. So anyway, I wanted to go talk to him about getting his support to teach another small group next year. And I've been putting it off and putting it off because I just get so tense. It's like sitting outside of the principal's office when you're in high school, right, or middle school or elementary school, whatever. I just get so worried that, I don't know, fear of rejection, that I'm not good enough, that he's going to say, you know, no way, I don't want you to do this again.
So what did you notice after doing the breathing and asking yourself the question, how does that fear make perfect sense?
It makes perfect sense because there I've got that fear of rejection, but I also know that I did a great job teaching the small group, and I know I could be good at it again for the right set of kids. So I'd be doing it for the kids. So to get over that fear, it would be good to know that I should just do it.
Nice. Awesome. And what did you notice, what other positive benefits did you notice in terms of maybe anything in your body? Did you feel more grounded or settled, more self-confident?
Oh, definitely more. The breathing definitely helps calm the fear and feel more relaxed. I don't know that I've ever gone, I didn't know that the breathing out longer was important. So that was a nice little tidbit there.
Awesome. Thank you for your share. I really appreciate it.
You're welcome.
So this compassionate perspective can organically create an awareness of your strengths or the positives that you have in the here and now. You might notice how prepared you are, how committed to growth you are. And for Debbie, she was doing it for the kids. Awesome. And writing it down, how does that make perfect sense, helps to anchor in this compassion. And this self-compassion has the bonus of turning into self-love. Yay! All right. So next in this exercise, you're going to consider in what way will you drain it, the fear, or deal with it. So if you had a big fear response, chances are there is still energy buzzing in your body. And it's important to release that so you don't re-trigger yourself. And that measured breathing is a way to drain it, but that might not be enough. So some other ideas about how to drain it are just shake your hands and imagine that extra energy just, you know, flicking out of your fingertips. Another great one is box the air is another great way to do it. Walk around. Because remember, that extra blood and energy went to your extremities. You might want to dance it out. That's another great idea for draining it. Now, dealing with it could be as simple as reining in your imagination. Because chances are, if you're having anticipatory anxiety, you're telling yourself a horror story. So why not choose to tell yourself the story where good things will probably happen? With your rational brain joining the party along with self-compassion, you're now going to see the many choices on how to deal with the situation that you have. Is it an uncomfortable conversation with someone? And what the action step could be just telling them you want to talk. If you're worried about, for me, you know, it's always writing, it's just sitting down and writing the first sentence of my presentation. So when you deal with it, ask yourself, what's the first baby step of action that I need to do to deal with this? So here's something else too. Whenever I work with people one-on-one, and when the fear is real, I always take a moment to answer the question, what's the worst thing that's going to happen? And the reason I do that is that this gives you a safety net that really, really tames the amygdala. It stops the yeah, but voice. And it gives you more confidence to do the realistic action steps. Another great thing about preparing for the worst is that when the worst doesn't happen, you gather a lot of evidence that it rarely happens. And you can use that to reassure your amygdala in the future. So I'll give you an example. So the first time I was talking from the stage, my anxiety was off the charts. So, and I was totally, totally prepared. But I had to go to what the worst thing that could happen for me is to freeze up and forget what I was going to say. So I prepared for that, and I took my notes up with me on stage, and I was transparent with the audience that it was my first time talking. Bear with me if I look at my notes a lot. I had my script printed out, 21 pages. Oh, I can laugh at it now. And the result was that when I knew I was that prepared, and even for the worst-case scenario, I could actually feel the excitement that I had about my first talk, and I was the appropriate amount of nervous because it was my first talk. And also the outcome was is I rarely looked at my notes, and the feedback that I got was that I seemed like I was a natural at it. It was awesome. So lastly, don't forget to look for the positive in what you just shifted. And look for the excitement that may have been mixed in with the fear. And the reason it's important to identify the positive of excitement is like what I said earlier. Excitement chemically hits your nervous system and brain, and it feels like fear. And your body doesn't have a system to naturally sort that out. It just all feels like fear. You have to look for the positive. You have to consciously do it. So that's why it's important. And more on that on Module 5 when I teach you about how to be deliriously happy in life. Don't forget to give yourself credit for working on how you can learn to handle your fear. All right, so the point of this is to bring your rational brain to the party, realize that you're safe in the here and now, nothing bad is happening to you in this moment, and you have choices and strengths to call on. Dealing with your fear in this take charge way makes you happy because you are feeling in control. You have a perspective, probably a normalized perspective, of what's really going on. You see choices to take care of yourself. You have the energy and motivation to take action. This adds to your self-confidence, builds your courage to take more risks, have a bigger life, try new things. And because you aren't repressing or avoiding that alarm bell of ringing fear in your head, you've freed up a huge amount of energy and life force, so you have a greater capacity to feel excited and happy. Ah, any questions or any shares? I will pull out a recording of the exercise and send it to you when I send you the link of the talk so that you can use it as a standalone exercise as often as you'd like. And there don't seem to be any questions. So I want to thank you for joining me today. And if you have any questions, please feel free to email me at sherry@effortlessmomentum.com. Sign up for Comfy Chair Coaching if you have questions or want to learn how to apply this to your life in a different way, and I'll send the link to my calendar as well. And join me next time for Module 4 on Emotional Awareness, where I'm going to be talking about why feeling bad is actually good. All right. So I'm going to unmute everybody. I just love everyone saying goodbye.